Dr. George Dimitri, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Good morning, I'm Taylor Wilson, and this is 5 Things You Need to Know Tuesday, the 21st of March, 2023. Today, how concerned should we be about the latest UN climate report? Plus, Amazon announces more layoffs, and thousands of teachers and staffers strike in California. Urgent action is needed to fight climate change. That's what the latest UN report on climate says. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres put it bluntly.
Humanity is on thin ice, and that ice is melting fast.
The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, painted a dire picture this week. But what's different about this report from other calls to action we've heard in recent years? I spoke with Brendan Guy, the Director of International Climate at the Natural Resources Defense Council, to find out. Brendan, thanks for hopping on the podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So can you just start by explaining what the IPCC is and why their findings carry so much weight?
The IPCC is a representative set of the world's foremost experts on climate science from every single region in the world. So they take a look at all the science that has been published over the last couple years and basically do a comprehensive assessment. They put together these reports every 5 to 7 years to say, what are the big picture implications that policymakers, that individuals, that business leaders need to know to incorporate climate action into their lives and into their day-to-day?
Yeah, I'm happy you used those words, big picture. What is different about this final report?
So there's two areas I think that are somewhat new in putting all these different puzzle pieces together. The first one is on urgency. So this report really is showing now that because we have basically seen emissions going up for those past 5 years, our pathway to hold emissions to that level of 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit is really now that much steeper. So it finds we really do need to step up our game in the next couple of years if we want to avoid that type of really, really negative outcome. A second insight that's somewhat new is on the equity side, that climate change is already causing impacts and harms that are beyond our ability to adapt, even in rich countries like the U.S., and that if we're going to really address these losses and damages that the world is experiencing and will continue to experience, we need to really hit accelerate in terms of what we're doing, not only to reduce emissions, but what we're doing to build resilience to the people and the ecosystems that are being hardest hit by this crisis.
So most of our listeners won't have the power required maybe to put these big government bureaucracies to work changing things. What can some of our listeners do about these issues?
That's the good news, is the IPCC tells us we still have a narrow window to act and we need everyone on board and all hands on deck. So everyone has a role to play in figuring out how to combat this crisis, whether it's, you know, having a conversation with a loved one, a parent or a friend. You can go to local meetings, you know, engage with your local elected officials, ask them what they're doing to take into account these latest scientific findings and, you know, craft policy that is actually going to make people's lives, you know, richer, healthier, more equitable, more vibrant, and act on that. You can write to your members of Congress. So whatever you do, no matter how small, I think the most important thing is do something. And it's going to take all of us to really make the changes necessary to confront this crisis.
What's next for the IPCC?
This was a little bit of a last call for them. So their next report is not going to come until the end of the decade. And so they are basically are saying, this is your last call to the world of, you have this window to act, and we will know by the next time we issue a report later this decade whether or not we have been able to avert the worst impacts of climate change. So it's a pretty significant task they have left us with. World leaders are gathering at the end of this year to actually look at that progress that the world has made, trying to implement the Paris Agreement. And they have an opportunity, a really generational opportunity, to set more ambitious targets on how much renewables are we going to invest in? How are we going to accelerate the transition from dirty fossil fuels? All these important targets, timelines, and investments that the world needs to make to accelerate this transition.
All right. The NRDC's Brendan Guy with some great perspective and insight for us. Thanks so much, Brendan. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Amazon announced plans yesterday to cut another 9,000 jobs. It's the second round of mass layoffs in recent months after the company previously cut some 18,000 positions. Amazon will be targeting roles in its cloud computing unit, human resources division, and in advertising and Twitch, according to CEO Andy Jassy. After a wave of hiring sprees in the early days of the pandemic, rising interest rates have pushed a number of tech giants to trim staff. Facebook parent company Meta announced plans earlier this month to lay off another 10,000 workers after cutting 11,000 last year. And Google said in January it was eliminating around 12,000 jobs. President Joe Biden issued his first veto yesterday. The move came after Congress voted to block a Labor Department rule allowing retirement plans to weigh the long-term impacts of social factors and climate change on investments. Republicans had called that a woke policy that hurts retirees' pockets. Biden said he signed the veto because the block passed by Congress would put retirement savings at risk around the country. A two-thirds majority of Congress would now be needed to override Biden's veto. President Donald Trump vetoed 10 bills in office, while President Barack Obama vetoed 12 bills. The massive Los Angeles Unified School District will be closed today because of a planned strike by tens of thousands of teachers and other school employees. What are they demanding? USA Today education editor Nirvi Shah explains. Hi, Nirvi. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So Los Angeles teachers and staff say they'll strike this week. What are they planning specifically and what are they demanding?
So the strike is actually initiated by support staff who really make schools run. You know, they are not the classroom teachers, but you have people who work in libraries, custodians, so school bus drivers, people who specifically work with kids with disabilities. And they are being joined by teachers in solidarity. They are looking for an increase in their hourly wages. They're looking for better benefits. And they say that for some of their members, it's just not a living wage what they earn to work in these schools. They have additional jobs to make ends meet.
So what are the potential consequences for students here at Nirvi?
It's the second largest school district in the country, so that's pretty big. And there's a lot of repercussions for parents who don't have childcare that's readily available. Some schools will be opened for supervision. The city has said that they'll be helping however they can with parks and other things to try to keep students engaged, even when their classes are out. This is a tough year, though. A lot of people consider this a big year for recovering from what students may have lost in terms of time during remote schooling because of COVID. And so any kind of loss is a tough one for kids, any kind of disruption. Potentially the strike could go beyond 3 days. I don't know what the limits are in terms of the union's ability to strike and their appetite for keeping this thing going to try to get what they want from the school system.
And Nirvi, do you think this could have an impact on other teacher labor movements around the country outside of Los Angeles?
It's possible. You know, I think about 2018 and 2019 when there was that so-called red wave of teachers protesting in West Virginia, Oklahoma, Arizona. You know, I'm not sure that this is quite the same. Teachers are certainly beleaguered right now. They're frustrated by the political winds that they're facing. They're frustrated by the demands of some groups of parents about what they can and cannot teach or the types of books that they can have or have not in their classroom. But I haven't seen so much momentum. I think LAUSD is a bit of its own thing or its own beast, so to speak. And we'll have to see if this is going to trigger things in other places.
All right. USA Today education editor Nirvi Shah with some great insight for us. Thanks, Nirvi.
Thank you.
The World Baseball Classic Final will be played tonight in Miami, with Team USA taking on Japan. The U.S. made the final after some offensive explosions in the knockout rounds, beating Venezuela 9-7 in the quarters and Cuba 14-2 in the semis. As for Japan, they rolled through Italy 9-3 in the quarters before coming from behind to beat Mexico 6-5 on a walk-off last night. This was the call on Japanese television. The once every 3 years World Baseball Classic has been a massive success after there was no tournament in 2020 due to the pandemic. According to Japanese sports newspaper Sponichi, 48% of Japanese households watched their quarterfinal game, a higher percentage than U.S. households during this year's Super Bowl. You can watch tonight's action at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox Sports 1. Thanks for listening to 5 Things. We're here every morning wherever you get your audio. I'm back tomorrow with more of 5 Things from USA Today.
Dr. George Dimitri, medical oncologist, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works, and then the expert clinicians that interact with patients and families every day. It's not easy to have input at a substantive level to new drugs that are safe and effective at treating cancer. So our whole mantra has always been to try to minimize risks to patients and yet try to maximize the opportunity of finding how effective a new treatment could be. And that means understanding cancer really, really deeply.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.